everybody, and welcome to the end of season WTF1 Awards. My name is Matthew Gallagher, and my co-host for this evening, who did not get the dress code, is Tom Bellingham, the WTF1 founder. And I really hope there's some kind of awards music overlaid on that intro. Otherwise, that is going to fall very flat. But Tom Bellingham, welcome along, my friend. I'm hoping you're a few drinks deep already into this WTF1 awards show. You'd think so, considering you're wearing Alpine merch. But let's just... Let's give people... Well, audio listeners won't hear it. Hear it? See it? They will hear it. But they can't see you right now. What are you wearing?
No. I've got a lovely Alpine hat on, which still has a sticker on, and it's for Alonso and Ocon, so you can't say that I'm an Alonso fanboy because, you know, representing both. And I've got an Alpine T-shirt on, which is made by Le Coq Sportif.
Ah, Le Coq Sportif.
And yes, he is.
Okay, perfect. Oui. And for audio listeners, I am wearing a full suit. Absolutely not wearing shorts below where the camera can see, and also wearing a WTF1 beanie for that branding. You know what I'm saying. So anyway, welcome along to the WTF1 Awards ceremony. We are going to be crowning some winners here today. Seven, in fact, seven award winners. I've gone for a very, like, award-winning show voice. So hopefully, I hope, Tommy, you can maybe announce one or two as well today and give it your best shot. So Tommy, we haven't actually explained why you're wearing what you're wearing. So you firstly need
why
to
I'm in my sporty chicken top.
Yeah, can we apologize? Can we get that out of the way?
Yes. Okay. So for context, well, the 40% of our Twitch chat had no idea why I was wearing Alpine merch for a start. But
like
basically,
WTF1 official, go follow us. Thank you.
As always. So the start of the year, I very boldly, and I would say confidently, I watched it back, I was very confident about it. I said that
almost
there's no way, well, clearly, because I'm here wearing this and spent money on it. I confidently said that no team other than Red Bull, Mercedes, Ferrari, and McLaren, which was the top four last year, would break into the top four. And I said, there's no way that's going to happen. And if a team does, I will buy their merchandise and apologize to them on the end of year podcast. So this is my apology to Alpine. I'm sorry. Well done, guys. Enjoy the money that I've spent on this merchandise. I didn't see it coming at the start. Fair play to Alpine. They did a great job at the start of the year. I listened to it back and totally forgot that Alpine were in the mud at the start of the season. Alonso had that massive fire and they looked like they were going to break down every single race. Kind of did with Alonso, but they were quick and got enough points. So well done.
So an apology to Alpine, and a thank you from me to Daniel Ricciardo for being washed. Otherwise, this wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
But yes, well done, Alpine, for P4 and the constructors, and the additional budget you've just got from Tommy spending. How much was it on the merchandise overall?
About 30 quid.
For the hat and the shirt?
Yeah, loving it. End of season. Lovely.
Okay. Hello. Other merchandise is available. Right, let's get into
everyone
this. Seven award winners, as I say today, to be crowned. So the first one we're gonna dive straight into it. All right.
The first one.
Yeah, we're not giving any, you know, terrible awards out to begin with. We're starting with Race of the Year. The nominees are Saudi, Silverstone. I'm hoping there's going to be like something coming up on the YouTube video. It might be a bit weird.
Probably
might be
not.
A bit weird for the audio. Okay, so that was a bit weird, I guess, for people. USA and Brazil. Okay, so we're not going to do this in a normal award shows where they just crown the winner. We're going to let you know the percentages. So up to 30,000 of you voted on these awards, and in fourth place from these nominations was Saudi with 9%. In third, we had the USA with 12%. And that means in second place, very close this, but coming up in the runners-up spot, is Brazil with 38%, which means the winner of Race of the Year goes to Silverstone, 41%.
That's close.
So let's break that down.
Applause now.
Well done. Canned applause.
Well done, Silverstone. British bias, standard, rigged.
Absolutely. So you've put in the podcast sheet, are we not going to talk about the races? We're going to talk about the races now.
You're just going to fly through them. And
no,
like,
we're not. This isn't like a 10-minute
video. Good podcast.
You know, this is a podcast where we'll now break it down and go, firstly, do we agree? Do we think that Silverstone was race of the year?
Ooh, yes.
Or were you a Brazil voter? I think for me, when we're looking at race of the year, this is particularly the Sunday occasion. Brazil was definitely race weekend of the year by an absolute country mile. But Silverstone...
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Putting my Leclerc bias aside, I probably would have voted Silverstone just for the jeopardy, the drama, a first-time winner. You had everything.
You did.
But if
that
I did have the Leclerc
as well,
fanboy,
oh my word.
I would have, definitely not voted.
Yeah, Silverstone. That's fair. We were going to get called British bias anyway, regardless, because if we'd have voted for Brazil, it would have been because George Russell won, he's British, and British bias and all that. Agree with you. Brazil was a superb race weekend. The race was great as well. Maybe some moments in the middle that weren't particularly great, but Silverstone for me was just drama all the way through. Like you almost forget that Max Verstappen came through the field, got into the lead, then had his puncture, dropped all the way back. Because you only really think about the end with all the battling between Leclerc, Hamilton and Perez, which was some of the best racing I've ever seen. And some people, you know, have argued that, oh, it's not particularly fair. They're all pushing each other off and going off. I've been dreaming of racing like that for ages, where it's just like IndyCar and you just let them do whatever the hell they want, drive off the track, push each other off, swap positions and let it all sort itself out. And it was absolutely incredible. And for me, that's why I think Silverstone beats Brazil in terms of just the best race, because that racing was superb. And yeah, like you say, you had Sainz as a first-time winner as well, which was a great story, even if it was a unusual victory where he sort of got handed it to him at the end on great tyres, but, you know, had to make the move and the camera didn't even know where to look, did it, at the end, because you had Hamilton trying to get through the field on Perez. And I think it was Alonso and Norris were on the back of them as well. That amazing battle for second. And then Sainz was like battling with Leclerc, and should he stay behind him? Should he protect the lead? You didn't know what was going to happen. It was just awesome. And the Zhou crash that someone just mentioned in the chat. You almost forget about that as well, because there was just so much going on. And obviously that is a miracle that he was fine after the roll hoop failing. And thankfully the halo did its job. So he had a miracle really there as well. Just what an insane race.
It certainly was. And one question that definitely comes out for me, at least, you know, when we're reflecting on Silverstone, Tommy, is why didn't they pit Leclerc?
I know. That'll haunt you to this day. We had that a lot though during the year. Why didn't they pit Leclerc, or why did they pit Leclerc? It was whichever was the wrong thing to do. That's what Ferrari would do.
Oh, Hungary. Good times. So well done to Silverstone for winning. Brazil, again, was a great race. 38% of you, very close between Silverstone and Brazil. It was, again, it was an incredible race weekend. Kevin Magnussen pole position, George Russell winning for the first time, Hamilton trying to chase him down in the final few laps. It had everything, Verstappen and Hamilton coming together. You had so much jeopardy once again, but I think in terms of a package deal of just the Sunday, Silverstone just edges it. Of course, you got USA where you had that really tense fight between Hamilton and Verstappen, and you're wondering, has Lewis done it? Is he going to just about manage to beat Max? But unfortunately, he didn't. And then, of course, you've got the massive crash with Stroll and Alonso, and Alonso coming through the field, and plenty of stuff with the USA, but only 12% voted for that.
USA was a banger, and only 12% shows how good the other two races were.
Yeah, because I don't think either of us really even put USA in that ballpark of definite race winner.
Could have been race of the year in maybe like a few other seasons gone by, but
Yes.
Brazil and Silverstone were just absolute bangers.
I thought Saudi was probably better than USA, maybe in terms of what we saw and the battle for the lead there and the DRS chicken that we saw and Perez leading and then getting shafted. Yeah. And we had plenty of stuff going on there as well. I mean, Leclerc leading the championship at that point. That's why I'll absolutely vote for Saudi. But
yeah, it was so amazing, that race.
We had some good races.
You had the excitement, didn't you, of the season. And after what happened in Bahrain as well, Saudi got... You rarely get a battle for the win like that where they're swapping constantly and it's going right down the thing, because it was only a few laps to go. And even when Verstappen got past, you still thought Leclerc might get the DRS on him and go back past him. It was just awesome.
It certainly was. Leclerc did not come out on top in that fight or in many of the other fights where he was at the front with Max Verstappen. Pain. Okay, race of the year done. Congratulations to Silverstone. We now move on to our second award of the morning, day, evening, wherever you are in the world. You can choose what time this WTF1 Awards is happening. It is Tweet of the Year. The nominees are Hamilton with Imagine response to Nelson Piquet's comments, Piastri shunning Alpine, Marcus Ericsson's silly season prediction, and Haas bantering Ryanair. Do you want me to go straight into the results?
We can do the results and then talk about them afterwards.
All right,
I don't mind.
All right, big boy, let's do it. Okay.
You're the host.
Am I? Who knows?
You got the suit on.
I do, half the suit. In fourth position, Ericsson with 3% of the vote. Little pitter-patter of applause for that one, I think. In third place, Haas and Ryanair with 9%. Hamilton, Imagine, gets runner-up spot with 24%, which means the winner of Tweet of the Year goes to Piastri shunning Alpine. There is no tweet in the world that would top that. What a moment. I don't think Oscar Piastri had in his mind that he wanted to win the WTF1 End of Season Award when he tweeted it, but he must have known this is going to break the internet. And it was such a crucial time for us because we had nothing going on. It was the summer break, wasn't it? And we just kind of got into the, we've not got any F1 news. Boom, Oscar Piastri. No, I'm not driving for Alpine. I've not signed anything and I won't be driving for them in 2023. My goodness me. I mean, to be honest, unbelievable PR stunt for Oscar Piastri there as well. Like, his name was everywhere.
Yeah. I wonder how many, I can't remember. We spoke about it at the time because I've just gone back on the tweet and I'm pretty sure he only had about 100,000 followers at this point, maybe even less.
I think it was less.
And the tweet got 386,000 likes and nearly 100,000 retweets. And Oscar Piastri, like you say, he wasn't really that well known at the time. And boy, did he suddenly, was he well known after that tweet. I mean, I don't think, I'd argue this is like probably the tweet. If you think of F1 Twitter, I think this will be remembered for years. We'll be looking back on this in 10 years time being like, do you remember when Piastri exploded the whole of F1 Twitter? Unbelievable. What a moment. It had to be Piastri. It couldn't have been anything else. And the vote reflects that.
Absolutely. I'm having a wardrobe malfunction for those watching on YouTube. But that was Piastri was absolutely the one to win that. Well done, Oscar. It was a win-win situation for him. He called out Alpine trying to do something sneaky. And you are, of course, a big Alpine fan, as you are fully head-to-toe in it. And I think he came out of that the absolute winner, despite I think the Alpine CEO saying that he'll regret doing it, he'll pay whatever he said about how Piastri won't be trusted by other teams moving forward and things like that. Reality is
it's a bold move. It was a bold move, but yeah,
absolutely.
What a way to start your F1 career as well.
Yeah, everyone knows your name, that's for sure. So well done, Oscar Piastri, you win Tweet of the Year.
One thing I will actually mention, Ericsson's 3% getting for his tweet. His silly season prediction, a lot of people mentioned that should be on the shortlist. And after watching it back, it's not actually as good of a tweet as... there was a moment, wasn't there, where you looked at it and went, this is going to all be right at one point. But actually, what he'd got Ocon and Gasly right, he'd got Norris and Piastri right, but everything Bottas and Joe was obvious. He thought Albon and De Vries were going to partner, which didn't obviously happen because De Vries went to AlphaTauri. He said Schumacher and Tsunoda would be partners at AlphaTauri, and Haas would be Magnussen and Ricciardo. So
it didn't actually end up being that good.
No, after all the talk of like, oh my word, Marcus Ericsson's gonna get every single one of these right, wasn't actually that much of a banger. So sorry, Marcus, you did win the Indy 500. At some point,
we were like, hold on, that's looking a little bit too good in my eyes. But and then of course the second one was third place, and the second one we're going to talk about is Haas. Banter with Ryanair. Ryanair got very vocal this year, didn't they? With F1 fans. You can tell that the admin is absolutely a Formula One fan. And Ryanair's social strategy is just engage with rogue. Everyone. Just be rogue and talk about everything. But it was quite funny that Ryanair said, Ryanair livery in F1? Nice. Haas would be in our budget range. Haas, nah, you're okay. We had enough of being last to our finishing destination last year. That is, I mean, unbelievable.
Fair play. That's fair play.
So well played. Well played, Haas. And then, of course, in runners-up spot was Hamilton, and just literally quote-tweeting, imagine. And that was in response to a fan tweet, wasn't it? And then...
Fan,
Lewis Hamilton just tweeted, who the F is Nelson Piquet, then closed Twitter. Then he just put imagine as a brilliant response.
We saw quite a bit of rogue Hamilton this year, didn't we, on Twitter, where he sort of doesn't care anymore. Because there was a lot of people also nominated the Alonso tweet, where I think Alonso said something about Hamilton wasn't very good anymore. And then Hamilton shared a picture of him on the podium when they were teammates ahead of Alonso with just a thumbs up. And I think Hamilton almost went back to the old school days of Twitter where
posting
is kind of unfiltered and
telemetry.
Yeah, just unfiltered. It was funny to see. So yeah, fair play. Great tweet, Hamilton, as well.
Yeah, we like to see the personality side of Hamilton on social media and not being, you know, sort of squashed into not saying anything because everyone jumps on everything he says. It was good to see. And of course, Piastri was 64%, an absolute landslide winner. Okay, we now move on to our third award. And it is the Social Media Teams Championship. Now, if you watch the internet's best reactions, you'll know. If you follow us on social media, you probably would have seen who was the winner. So in third place was Alpine with 13 points. In second place, it was Mercedes with 24 points. And the winners of the Social Media Team Championship, once again, a Haas F1 with 34 points. It wasn't even close. They ran away with this championship. And as much as, you know, we sometimes do double points for the last race and all that good stuff, they'd already wrapped it up. It was done and dusted. They just posted banter after banter and Gunther Steiner ships and Kevin Magnussen on pole. And they just had everything work out for them this year. And they are definitely the funniest, I would say, social media outfit on the grid.
Yeah, and fair play to them that they carried on winning despite the fact that they weren't, because a lot of the banter from the year before was them sort of like self-owning themselves because they were the worst team on the grid. Now, they're not that, but they still brought the bant, so fair play to them. Awesome.
It's funny, last year even, hello Matt, I think I tweeted them saying what, because I think they put some sort of graphic out and I replied to them saying, if you ever were to get pole position, do you have a graphic ready? And then they just said, oh, you'll have to wait and see. And then, of course, when they got pole in Brazil, they absolutely did not have that graphic ready, did they?
Yeah,
it was
no
in
chance.
No archive whatsoever. That was made within the 8 minutes of that last Q3 session. it's amazing. That whole moment was awesome, wasn't it?
It was. Incredible scenes.
Incredible scene. So well done, Haas. You won the Social Media Teams Championship for a second year. We now move on to our next award, which is Most Controversial Moment. Now, the nominees are Vehicle on Track in Japan, Verstappen Title Confusion in Japan, Red Bull Cost Cap Breach, and Verstappen versus Perez Team Orders in Brazil. Now in fourth position.
A lot of Verstappen in there.
A lot of Verstappen in there. A lot of Japan in there as well. In fourth position, we have the title confusion with 8% of the vote. In third place, team orders in Brazil with 16% of the vote. In the runners-up spot, Red Bull cost cap breach with 33%, which means the winners of the most controversial moment of the 2022 F1 season is the vehicle on track in Japan.
Ouch, yeah.
43% of the vote, 10% clear of the Red Bull cost cap breach. I think it's interesting. It's how you kind of measure what a controversial moment is. I guess from the sporting personality, drivers clashing side, I would have voted the Verstappen-Perez team orders in Brazil because that caused an absolute meltdown of discussion and chat about that all. But when you look at, I guess, controversy in the sense of the FIA not doing their job, the vehicle on track wins hands down every single day of the week. No problems, no questions asked. So I can see why so many people voted for that. I too back that vote. And that whole debacle was just, it doesn't feel real, to be honest with you. It doesn't feel like it was something that actually happened after all the learnings, especially at the track where we so sadly lost Jules Bianchi after a crash with one of the recovery vehicles. And, you know, there were so many levels to it. It wasn't just like, oh, you've made a mistake. It was, you haven't learned from your previous mistakes. It's at the same track. There were so many things to it, which upset a lot of people.
Yeah, because we had that recovery vehicle on track in the Massey era. I want to say, was it Turkey that came out?
Yeah.
But again, it came out, cars were coming out on track, and it was like, it was still appalling and it was really bad. And we rightly kind of criticized it. But this was just 10 times worse. And the fact that the cars were going past it, watching Gasly in particular, yes, he was going quicker, but he was, you know, sticking to a delta time to recover back. Like, it just should never have been in that situation anyway, for that to happen. Not only the vehicle as well, the onboard of the marshal where he's sort of moving scientist's car, why they needed to be there. And then it was a red flag all day long. I don't understand why it wasn't just immediately red flagged. So the fact that, yeah, the whole thing was a mess. And yeah, you mentioned Japan, just that whole weekend was just an absolute disaster for the FIA. And I do feel really sorry for the fans as well that I only got to see half a race essentially after, you know, waiting so long for the Japanese Grand Prix to be back. Such a shame. And yeah, this one is just, can't even make a joke of it. It's just, it was just appalling what happened. And rightfully, you know, people have voted it the most controversial moment of the year, and hopefully this will never happen again. But we said that after Suzuka 20, sorry, my mind's gone blank. 16? Was it 15?
Yeah, 15, 16.
15, 14,
14. 14.
A long time ago. But yeah, it should never have happened again.
It should not. And it's interesting, someone in the chat said it was not controversial. We all agreed it was bad, which I guess is a very good point.
Yeah. Like,
controversy is usually when we have a split of decision. Thank you, chat, as well, for confirming it was 2014. Yeah, but I guess in the same sense, it's controversy in the sense of the FIA were kind of not really admitting too much fault there. And they said they'd have an investigation and whatnot. But yeah, let's hope we don't have to talk about Japan and stupid decisions ever again. Fingers crossed. Next up. No, before we do that, let's talk about the other three. Title confusion. Of course, you said it was a terrible Suzuka time for the FIA. And that was another thing where Verstappen was given full points and no one really had a clue what was going on. Verstappen didn't know if he was world champion. Johnny Herbert was the one to tell him in an interview. You had just, you know, the whole thing was just crazy. The fact that a massive organization like the FIA, like Formula One, couldn't work together and figure out what the hell was going on. So that was sad for you, Tommy, because again, another championship where you couldn't celebrate it.
You get that like one moment, yeah.
we go, Max Verstappen is the world champion.
Yeah.
Because it just, I mean, you did have it in 2021, but there was that whole sort of gray cloud over you going,
that's
have
not
I
right.
won though? Is it going to be okay? So.
Yeah, it's just a mess. And again, the same race, the fact that they couldn't get it right. They had it was weird that the graphics were telling you that they were rewarding full points the whole time, but the commentators weren't briefed and didn't know how that can happen is just baffling. And what's a shame as well, it ruined that excitement of Perez chasing down Leclerc, because that would have been the moment where, you know, you'd have had Crofty, potentially going, oh my word, you know, he's gone through, that's probably going to be a penalty, that could be the world championship there. And then even though it would have been a penalty deciding, then it would have changed the championship. But the problem was, we got told about the Leclerc penalty and you're like, well, it doesn't matter because it's our points. But then it wasn't our points. It's just a mess.
Leclerc could have won the world title had he not locked up at that final corner. Who knows? The whole universe could have been different. That is Copium at its finest. The other two were team orders in Brazil, which I kind of mentioned. I think that was enormous, that team radio that came across from Max to Sergio. It caused all kinds of discussions around what he meant by it. Was it Perez crashing on purpose in Monaco to stop him from improving behind? And there was lots of rumors, lots of chatter around it.
Nowhere.
Yeah, it was. I just remember sat there going, he said what?
What? Yeah, because it was so. It wasn't like it was bubbling up and you're like, these two are going to fall out at some point. It was literally just out of nowhere. You thought they were besties. You know, Perez has been the perfect teammate, going for second in the title. And then all of a sudden it's like, boom, Max is unhappy about something that happened way earlier in the year, still not over it.
Even though they're not fighting for the world title, Max has it wrapped up.
It wasn't for a win. It was literally sixth or seventh, or was it fifth or sixth?
It was purely sending a message to his teammate about, I am not going to help you.
Yeah.
Unless it's on my terms.
Yeah.
It was just the strangest thing ever, wasn't it? So that got 16%. Then Red Bull cost cap breach, of course. You know, we don't have to go into that anymore. They breached the cost cap. They got a fine. Some people don't think it's...
I can't believe they mentioned it at the FIA Awards. They tried to make a joke of that as well. That was just like...
Well, can you believe Red Bull put a little joke about it in their own Christmas image?
I can. I can. Yeah, there was some funny stuff in there. But for the FIA to make a joke out of it... the FIA president was on very odd form on that in that award show.
I think some drinks had been flowing at that particular ceremony. That was close with 33%. But yeah, the vehicle on track wins that award. Now we go to F1 Driver of the Year. And this is crowned through our ABCDE F1 driver ratings. If you want to go listen to the full podcast, we've already done one. So go and check that out on all good audio platforms. And also it's on YouTube as well. Driver rankings 20-1. No surprise, the F1 driver of the year goes to Max Verstappen. Should we get the trumpet out again? Yeah, get the cape on. I mean, you're wearing Alpine. So
yeah, screw the Alpine.
You're not a Max fan right now. But my goodness me, this just... He was too good. Even if Ferrari had performed at a decent level with strategy and reliability, they still wouldn't have been able to beat Max, in my opinion. I think if it was completely equal machinery, Max Verstappen would still come out on top against Leclerc. I think it would have been close. I think maybe we could go down to the last couple of races. But Verstappen was on another level. We talk about it a lot in all of our watch-alongs and all of our podcasts, you know, how he's always on it straight away. You know, FP1, he's out there and he is a second and a half quicker than everybody else. He just gets it. He never has off days. Singapore was... one in a million.
The whole year, I'd say.
And he was sensational. And we've said, you know, years ago, when Max gets a championship winning car, he's going to be a very scary prospect. And he is proving that that is the case.
Boy, is that happening. Yeah. I mean, the only other mistake I can think of other than Singapore is when he spun in Hungary and he won that race. from after spinning. Yeah, just phenomenal season. Scary how in a car that's definitely the best car, no doubt, but not unbelievable dominance that we've seen in the past of like the peak of Mercedes or maybe Vettel's Red Bull for a couple of years of his dominance, or, you know, the McLaren Honda days where they just were going to win every race regardless. The fact that, you know, Max Verstappen set the win record very close to doing it in percentage still, despite all those races. But
Schumi defended that one. Come on, the lads. That's one of the only records he has left.
But yeah, speaking of Schumi, like, we are seeing Max Verstappen very, in my opinion, he's becoming very similar to Michael Schumacher in terms of the way he's driving, in terms of particularly this year, his pole to win ratio, similar to Michael Schumacher's career. Doesn't matter if he's not on pole. Apparently, it doesn't matter if he's 14th on the grid at Spa, he's still going to win. And yeah, just a phenomenal season, and exactly what we said. We said it so many times, but it's just unbelievable that he managed to be that good when all he needed was a championship-winning car. Like you said, imagine how good it'd be if he gets a title-winning car. Start of the year, he wasn't. What was it like? What didn't like the car, and it was more suited to Sergio, and he was still winning races and leading the title after four or five races. So, yeah.
There's a lot of similarities, I think, between Verstappen and Schumacher. Not just that whole, doesn't matter if he's on pole, he's still going to be incredible in the race, but also having that tenacity, that willingness to sometimes go past where the rules allow try and make sure that he can get the most points. And especially, I think, in 2021, you can say that that was the case, where he very much tested the FIA and what they were willing to do. Whether that's a good or bad thing, you can decide. But definitely a lot of similarities there with Schumacher. So well done, Max Verstappen. You win F1 Driver of the Year. We now move on to Esports Driver of the Year. Tommy, a massive esports fanatic, watches all of the esports championships.
I saw this moment, so I know who's won it at least.
Well done, well done. So the esports driver of the year goes to none other than Lucas Blakely. Lucas, if you've watched F1 esports, he came from not even being picked in the pro draft, then finally getting selected in 2019. He finished, I think, 15th in 2020, and so 2019 and 2020, and then eventually 2021, he started winning some races, and this year he won the F1 Esports World Championship, won the Drivers' Championship, and the step up from him has been absolutely incredible, and he should be very, very proud of himself. He's, you know, the emotion as well, that was the one thing I saw, because obviously I'm part of the F1 Esports shows, the emotion that he showed after winning a race or in an interview or just when you talk to him off camera, you can tell how much it means to him and how much it meant to him to win the driver's title. And I don't think there's anyone more deserving than what Lucas has managed, you know, being signed to McLaren Shadow, having that completely new environment around him. You know, you're signed to a big Formula One team. You've got, turning up to the McLaren Technology Center every day and training there. And that must be daunting in itself, but he managed to hold on. He had the greats of Rasmussen, Otmar, etc., chasing him down at the end, but he held on. There was a moment, I think, in Brazil where it was the penultimate race of the year, and he bounced back after getting caught over the last rounds before that. Penultimate round of the year, he had to win or get some sort of decent result, and he absolutely smashed it. So, well done, Lucas. You win.
So I mentioned as well, he beat Sebastian Vettel in the Race of Champions as well.
He did.
Quite the moment. So, fair play to him. We chatted to him before the finale, didn't we? I remember having a chat with him. And yeah, he the emotion when he crossed the line. Like you say, I never really sort of thought about it, but others may be like doing it from home when you've got that pressure of you're at McLaren, so you're in that environment where maybe it's not as comfortable as you can just get in the zone at your own kind of comfort place or whatever. But yeah, awesome to see, and yeah, that emotion was incredible as he crossed the line. They put so much effort into these things. I mean, even just as a casual gamer, like, I'm absolutely awful at F1 games. I know how much, like, when I used to practice a lot, you're still absolutely nowhere near. So that it just shows what level they have to be on. You can't just go like, oh, I can't really be bothered to play today. Like, you've got to be improving, like, all the time and stuff. So yeah, impressive stuff. Well done.
Yeah, the thing that's most impressive about it is not necessarily being really good at the game, because there are clearly plenty of drivers that are really good at the game, but it's having that mentality to turn up when the lights are on you, the cameras are on you, $750,000 on the line, and to perform and do no mistakes during a race, because that is one mistake and you miss out on Q1 or Q2. Like, the gaps in qualifying is absolutely outrageous. I'm talking thousands of a second between the top four or five. So yeah, incredible stuff. Well done, Lucas. Okay, we now move on to best moment of the year.
The big one.
The big one. The final award of this year. The nominees are Leclerc versus Verstappen, Saudi battle for the win. Through goes Hamilton at Silverstone. Latifi purple sector in Hungary. And Kevin Magnussen's pole position. In fourth position. Last.
Fittingly.
Is Nicholas Latifi with 16% of the vote. Well done.
We should have done 20 nominees, so he could have been 20th.
Come on.
It was a great moment. Fair play to him.
To be fair, he had a few good moments, didn't he? Purple
Hungary.
Sector.
Hungary was his jam, wasn't it?
Practice. He scored. I mean, to be fair, I would have put in this best moment of the year category him turning the wrong way at Suzuka, and I feel like that maybe would have got some more votes. But either or, Latifi. To be fair, the split of votes are quite close, actually. So 16% for Latifi in fourth position. In third place is the Leclerc versus Verstappen Saudi battle with 22% of the vote. The runner up is through goes Hamilton with 30% of the vote. And the winner of best moment of the year goes to Kevin Magnussen and his pole position at Brazil with 2% more than through goes Hamilton with 32%. Well done to Kevin Magnussen on that one. Interesting. Two very different moments, I would say. Through goes Hamilton being, of course, Sergio Perez and Leclerc fighting really hard, both pushing each other off the track. Hamilton just drove past them. Crofty, of course, added to that moment massively with that bit of commentary. And it's a lot of people's favourite moment for sure. But I guess from a sporting perspective, Kevin Magnussen in a Haas, getting pole position after the year they had last year, it was very fitting. And I think for me, yeah, definitely the best moment of the year. I think maybe the percentage would have been more heavily in the favour of Kevin Magnussen had it been him clinching it at the end of qualifying rather than him getting it and then 8 minutes of... didn't have that climax that maybe you were looking for at Japan with Verstappen's world title. It's the same kind of thing, isn't it, where the delay sort of takes away from it a little bit, but he's still got pole.
Yeah, it's still an incredible moment. I mean, if you've got to think, Magnussen getting pole, if you go right back to the start of the year and the first test, you'd be like, wait, Magnussen's driving? Because he wasn't even on the grid. And it was only because of Mazepin losing his seat and that whole Haas debacle that Kevin Magnussen returned. And then who would have thought, especially, I think what makes that moment so incredible, and it's almost like good and bad, because if you think it's sad that we, this year in particular, more than any moment, we didn't see anywhere near enough underdog moments. You know, you didn't get a single midfield driver on the podium apart from Lando once right at the start of the year. And you had no idea that we'd go through a whole year where you don't really get any of these moments. You don't get like an Ocon winning for Alpine or, like an Aston Martin on the podium or something like that. We didn't get anything like that. So when near the end of the year, you thought season's wrapped up, we're not going to get much here. It's a sprint race. So we had quali on the Friday. And the fact that Magnussen, yes, he was fortunate, no doubt, but he got into Q3 and put the lap in that he needed, got to the end of the pit lane. And let's not forget, you know, he put that lap in. There were other cars on the track. Yes, it got wetter and stuff, but unbelievable. And a Haas, I think we said this during the watch along, only I'd say probably Latifi getting pole would have been more of a like, oh my God moment, because Haas, let's be honest, with the greatest of respect, they've not had a real standout moment. You know, they've still not got a podium or anything like that. So for them to get a pole position, it was just magical moment. It was just such a feel-good moment that you just love about F1 when you get an underdog story like that.
I called it a little bit as well, jokingly, in the watch along.
Yeah, you did.
I was like, oh, Kevin Magnussen at the front of the queue. Is he going to pop in a lap and get pole or something like that?
Yeah.
And then he well and truly did. I was absolutely joking when I said it, but it was a great lap. That's it, right? Mm. And also, I feel like, you know, you can say, oh, he was the first in the queue and whatnot, and, you know, he had the best conditions. But I think Lando was at the back of the queue, and he still managed, like, fourth or fifth.
He did, yeah. It was incredible.
So let's not take anything away from K-Mag, putting it where, you know, he put the lap in as well as had some decent track conditions. But, Kevin Magnussen wins best moment of the year.
Yes.
Now, one more award, which isn't in the sheet, goes to, or is, we're going to announce it, best dog of the year, because you can see that he has announced himself onto the the live stream. If you hold him up slightly, there he is. It's of course going to have to go to Frank Speckelbottom, who, you know, not only is he a great dog, he's brought many yawns to the watch along, many Twitch watch along yawns, you know, predicting a lot of the future, a lot of it being wrong. I won't lie to you, Frank. Also, I'm hoping maybe for next year, you just stop being so soppy. I think that would be a good start, wouldn't it, Frank? He still wins best dog of the year.
Roscoe robbed, someone said in the comments.
Roscoe has been well and truly robbed, but how many yawns has he delivered us on this WTF1 podcast? But look at him, what an absolute state. If you're an audio listener, I'm sorry, but he is currently sat on Tommy's lap being very, very soppy indeed. Tommy, that is the end of the WTF1 awards for this year. How do you feel about that? And what are your final thoughts?
My final thoughts are, I'm very warm wearing a hat. I never wear hats. So that's a new experience for me. I think it really adds to me looking like even more of a child as well.
Yeah.
So that's a good look. And yeah, nice to reflect back on maybe not a vintage year, but it's shown that we've had some pretty incredible moments. And thanks to everyone this year more than ever, you know, people experiencing it with us, because we've been doing so many Twitch watch alongs and things, and you know, we've been there with you witnessing those moments like Kevin Magnussen pole or through goes Hamilton as we heard it 5 minutes down the road before it happened as we were sat in a room outside of Silverstone. So I will say thank you everyone that joined us this season for all these amazing moments and living F1 with us F1 nerds.
That's exactly it, right? It is living these moments with you all, whether it's live on Twitch, whether it's on through our podcast, whether it's through our YouTube videos or social media or whatever. It's been awesome. And as you say, it's not been a vintage year. If it was a bottle of wine, it's something you'd crack out if you had some people over. You know what I mean? Like, you know, you'd pour it out. You don't really care about the wine too much. But you go, oh, that's it tastes all right, you know. But it's not. You get the cape on. It wasn't anything to shout home about, I think, 2022, but 2023 is where the Ferrari hype train comes back.
Is it?
It's where, yeah, I can already hear the chew-chewing in the distance, and it's not
the
even January.
Masterclass.
And also, I want to shout out to those that sent over pictures to me from listening to this podcast. I absolutely love seeing all of them. I'm pretty much liking every single one I see come through. Someone's like, they're doing their driveway and it's snowy and they're like, oh, I'm just listening to the podcast. Another one's in a field somewhere. Like,
yeah,
it's just,
that guy in the
tractor
in Australia or something.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Yeah, so please keep sending those in because I absolutely love seeing them. At Matty WTF1 or at Tommy WTF1 on Twitter. That's probably the easiest way to send them in. But yeah, it's awesome to see that stuff. And thank you again for all the support you've given this podcast, this Twitch channel, everything else over the year. It's been amazing. Probably going to do a stream tomorrow as well, so don't worry, we're going to play some games and have some fun stuff to see out at the end of 2022, but maybe the last podcast of the year. So in that case, I want to wish you a very happy new year. I hope you had a good Christmas, and we will see you for 2023 as well, as Frank's getting stuck in the wire. Lovely stuff. Anything else from you, Tommy?
Yeah, I will echo those thoughts about the podcast, and the amazing support on the podcast this year has been unbelievable. You know, we've done a lot more podcasts this year and really enjoyed and doing them. So yeah, thanks for listening to my awful opinions that make me wear and buy Alpine merchandise.
Amazing stuff. We'll see you very soon, audio listeners. We're going to carry on Twitch for a little while, so don't leave if you're on Twitch, all right? I see you going. We're not going yet, all right? We'll see you very soon. Bye.
Bye.